Hello, and welcome to Debt Wired podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Saba, senior reporter of Debt Wire North America. I'm glad to be joined today by Jay Weinberger, managing director of Houlihan Lokey's Financial and Restructuring Group, where he has advised companies and lenders across many industries, including situations in gaming like Caesars Entertainment, Las Vegas Hilton, Trump Entertainment, and Ocean Casino Resort. When he is not watching Florida Gator football or traveling around to try to reach 50 states, he's providing financial advisory solutions to gaming companies and leaders, as well as their lenders. With a 15-year track record of fixing leisure and gaming companies, Jay, what do you think it takes to have a lasting career in restructuring?
First, thanks, Danielle, for having me on. Look, I do a lot of our analyst and associate recruiting for Houlihan, so I get this question a lot. I generally give an answer of some combination of you need a lot of energy, endurance, flexibility, good communication skills, an understanding of client service, and a relentlessness when trying to achieve a goal or meet a deadline. Maybe a canned answer, but it really is that get shit done gene.
Okay.
That makes one really successful. But I think just more specifically to gaming a little bit, I think you have to have the ability to separate your own self from the customers of the business. So oftentimes, bankers and investors sit in New York and look at the world through their eyes. Especially in the gaming landscape, it's a big country. There are a lot of different consumer preferences and a lot of different behaviors. I think back to one of my first deals, actually, Danielle, which was in Colorado, Blackhawk, Colorado, where there was a brand new shiny giant casino. As part of a deal, you go to the casino and due diligence and you go to the competition. You look at the crowds, you look at the behaviors, you look at the slot machines. What I noticed was this new casino was empty at the beginning. And the other casinos that looked old and dingy to me, they were crowded. And you talk to people, and what I learned is a lot of the customers were focused on value. And they saw this new shiny building, and they said, man, it must have cost a lot to build this. And so therefore, when I go play the slot machine, they're probably going to need to take more from me. So I'd rather go sit at this old casino. But it goes to the point, and maybe I didn't mention it in my first run, learning and the ability to open your eyes and learn and take from your past experiences, have them contribute to your future successes. So that's just one of the things I've learned along the way in restructuring and restructuring gaming companies.
So you talked about your first deal. How did you get involved in gaming? Was it just handed to you or did you have an interest in it?
I started in Houlihan Lokey's restructuring group in 2007. Which was, as you can imagine, a very interesting time. The previous decade had seen proliferation of gaming all across the country. What started in New Jersey and Las Vegas in the early 90s spread to the Southeast and Midwest, and even more so as you got into the 2000s, the Northeast grew, as well as you saw a boom in Las Vegas on the Strip and in locals' markets. Casino companies are often financed with debt, because once they're built, they spit off a lot of cash flow. And so that's how they're often financed. So that's the setup. I started at Houlihan. Obviously, the financial crisis hit. And as a firm, and personally, we were restructuring lots of different businesses. But there was just such a high volume of gaming companies that were distressed because you had that perfect storm of a lot of new buildings, so maybe a little saturation. And you had a weakened consumer. Then a little bit later came in 2010, came higher gas prices. And these casinos were at various stages of just being opened or about to open or opened disappointingly. And ultimately, a lot of them fell short of expectations and had too much debt. And that's kind of how it started. And we spent that next decade going through and visiting these properties, restructuring them. A lot of them ultimately restructured and sold and did well.
So it was timing. It was just the timing and when you got into restructuring.
A lot of it had to do with timing. And like I said, a lot of business. And in my firm, I was hungry. I wanted to do it. And that's what I focused on for the earlier part of my career.
So now fast forwarding to 2026, what do you think gaming executives are most concerned about this year and ahead looking forward?
Yeah, it's funny because I think about 2026. I think back to 2014. I wrote an article for the Journal of Corporate Renewal. And I think casino executives, it's not the same exact fact set, but they had a lot of those same concerns. So first, casino spend it's highly discretionary, and it's largely impacted by the economy, by gas prices. It's the last dollar in people's pocket, oftentimes, that is being spent at casinos. And so today, executives are focused on their customers and the competition. In Vegas, I think the convention business is stabilized, but the leisure customer is not there consistently. So I think when I think about the Vegas executives, they're concerned about getting butts in seats and heads in beds. People come and they spend, and there are some trends I think that are concerning, and I think those executives are very concerned about that. In regional markets, I think they've held in, I think partly due to lower gas prices. I think so also perhaps benefiting from customers skipping their trip to Vegas, which is more of a larger bite. And so they get a few smaller bites at the local casino. And I think people that haven't gone to Vegas have maybe left a little bit more at the regionals, and that's keeping them stable, I'd say. And I think if I'm an operator of a more regional casino, I'm thinking, how do I continue that trend? How do I continue to drive traffic? And how do I make sure that if the economy does continue to weaken, I have some defenses against that?
DebtWire reported that clouds are on the horizon for Las Vegas, as you just pointed out too, and other large gaming companies. Do you think that's true? Because they don't have maturities looming, not this year at least.
Look, there's certainly weakness from an operational perspective. Like I just mentioned, the economy has shown signs of weakness. I think there's other trends that are concerning more long-term as well. You have less international travel from Asia and Canada. And perhaps you have some changing consumer preferences. We're seeing impacts. And look, it doesn't take a ton of people, but we're seeing impacts in lots of consumer businesses from GLP-1 and younger folks drinking less alcohol. It's not everybody. If you just take 5% of the population and they change their behavior, that can certainly impact folks. So I think you're right. When you look at the larger gaming operators, and we'll talk about, I think, probably my watch list later on a little bit, but you're not going to see the big names, the Caesars, the MGMs, or anything like that. They are, to your point, they're not on any immediate list. However, when we look at long-term trends, I do think executives and investors are looking at Las Vegas, and they're saying if this trend continues for a prolonged period of time, we'll have trouble. When you look at the financial crisis, the Caesars closed their acquisition, Apollo closed it, and TPG closed their acquisition of Caesars, I want to say in 2008, and there was a period of stress in the business, and ultimately, it was on a watch list starting in 2010, 11, 12. They made some moves in 2012, 13, but it ultimately didn't file for bankruptcy, I want to say, until late 2014 or early 15. For a lot of these businesses, they have liquidity, they have the infrastructure, they have the ability to cut costs a little bit here and there, so they'll have time, but it's a question of, does the business pick up? Do the negative longer-term trends really take hold and continue to hurt the business? Look, for the past 20 years, originally they built the casinos and everyone just showed up because they couldn't gamble anywhere else. Now people can gamble elsewhere. So when you think about what a casino can offer, I think it's the same conversation for the past 15 years. How do we add other aspects, other entertainment that will bring people there? Vegas was super successful at it. Now they have a problem where they have this infrastructure of entertainment. It's gotten really expensive and there's a lot of it. And so they need those, whatever it is, 40 million visitors to come through the airport every year. And if they don't, you know, their performance is hurt.
We're seeing that there's a few gaming companies that have explored strategic options to sell pieces of their businesses, like Affinity Gaming, Century Casinos. It hasn't been without difficulty. So what do you think has been the challenge with selling these assets?
So just at a high level, there's been a ton of consolidation. So what I talked about going back 15 years was a lot of single asset casinos that they would be developed by some local person and a casino company or local folks and ultimately sell to a larger casino company. But there's been so much consolidation aided by the REIT dynamic and just an abundance of financing available to all these casino operators that now you look at a few very large companies versus a lot of smaller companies. So when you look at some of the assets, take Affinity, for example. Prim is a lost business. They don't really know what to do with it. There are ideas, but it'll take time with a new airport being built out there in 2034. So it'll take time and there's just structural issues. I think when you look at their Midwest assets, they're smaller. There's not a ton of growth. Do they have value? Yeah, of course they have value, but they have value to someone that'll move the needle for, and they're going to take a little bit of work. So when you look at a larger gaming operator like a Caesars or Penn, it's just too small. It's not going to move the needle for them. It's not going to be worth the energy and time they're going to spend on it. So really, when you're out there trying to sell some of these smaller assets that don't really have growth, it's not that they have no value and there's no price for them. It's just that there's a limited universe of buyers. And I think that's been a challenge for Affinity and Century. The other dynamic is that Century's portfolio is all leased. And so when you've gone out and sold all your real estate, you are just an operating company and you command a lower multiple in the market. And we've heard other folks recently, I think most recently, the CEO of Monarch said that for an acquisition to be attractive in today's market for him and for others, they think the land needs to be included because it provides flexibility for the acquirer later on to continue to operate it, to sell it with the land, or to ultimately just sell the land and operate it. But it gives the acquirer that option. Whereas if you've already sold your land, the acquirer doesn't have that option. It's going to be less attractive.
This year's big LME trend was the tiered exchanges. And we've seen gaming companies participate in them. Do you expect this trend to take shape in gaming in the near future? Why or why not?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think gaming companies are often LME or I'll call creative transaction candidates. Look, they have multiple assets, some of which are more valuable than others. So I think back to like Caesars, and there's the book on it and all the moves that they did and the actions that they took. But if there was today's LME technology, at that time, it would have been a simple drop down and a refinancing and all that wouldn't have happened. I also look at, so let's take Bally's. And Bally's is a topical name. They did a transaction in Europe with Intralot, where it was almost like an LME with a third party. There were assets moved, things moving around. You have equity, you have debt being repaid. But it all comes from the idea of these kind of different assets. One current situation, I think this is really an interesting one, is Evoke, which is a European online gaming, mostly online gaming operator. It's the old 888bet. They bought William Hill's non-US operations. 70% of their business is in the UK, where they just changed the tax law to be quite negative for Evoke. So now the rest of Evoke's business is elsewhere in Europe where there's actually growth. They have a business in Italy that's growing quite nicely right now. And I think a lot of folks would be interested in it. You add up all the value and you look at it, you say, okay, maybe it clears the debt, maybe it doesn't. Over time, you could see where the value exceeds the debt meaningfully. But today, if you're an equity holder, you might say, if I go sell Italy to pay down debt, I'm capping my equity upside. So it feels like there might be a world where they go to their lenders and say, hey, I have this asset. It's worth a lot right now. We can sell it, but I cap my upside. Why am I going to do that? You need something from me. And so maybe it's that the company goes and asks those lenders for some type of concessions, whether it be discount or some more time or something like that, like you see in a lot of these LMEs. So I think that dynamic of I'm a gaming operator, I may have some old tired assets, but I have some good shiny new toy that kind of helps the setup of an LME. And that's why I think we'll see more of these in the gaming space, especially if the economy continues and we can have continued weakness in Vegas. If the regionals get weak, I think you'll see more companies trying to take advantage of distressed debt prices or lower debt prices.
Your outlook for gaming companies seems pretty lukewarm. You're not expecting it to fall off the cliff for the year ahead?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Look, a lot depends on the economy. And there's also different economies in different places in the country. So it's also possible you could see weakness in certain regional markets more so than others. It's not a straight line across the country. But we're not in a situation where it's 2010, 11, the country's reeling from the financial crisis, gas is $4.50, and folks are, the last thing on their mind is going to a casino. I think that we're in a world where if there's continued weakness or it gets worse and it lasts for a while, we would see stress, but I think that wouldn't be a 2026 issue for most companies.
We're seeing a lot of out-of-court restructurings happening. What do you think that is more than in-court? Across industries, not just gaming.
Across all industries. And look, I don't just operate in gaming. There haven't been a ton of gaming restructurings in the last 5 years, but companies are preferring to do deals out of court. There are a lot of factors. One, the cost of bankruptcy is skyrocketed. Legal fees, financial advisors, a lot of folks just associated with bankruptcy. Additionally, you have a dynamic of unsecured creditors committees making noise in bankruptcy, and more unsecured creditors committee have less actual financial debt holders. So there's a cost to getting rid of them. I think you also have incentives structured such that a lot of lenders used to be distressed investors who come in a big way and buy large positions. But today, if you look at a credit, there's the largest holder owns 5%. And they may just be incented to kick the can, even if it's at some smaller discount. You have to take some small discount and give some maturity extension. That may be better than facing the pain today. So I think there are just a lot of structural factors that contribute to everybody being okay with the sponsor or the operator having more time to execute on the business plan than just going and restructuring and trying to take over the company.
So what live situations are on your credit watch list?
As we discussed, nothing's imminent, and there are those larger names that we've talked about that I don't think are really in the near term. We also talked a little bit about Affinity, Century, and Evoke. Look, Bally's has been a hot topic over the past couple years. I talked about the transaction with Intralot, but they've created runway. They have a lot of development projects. They have Chicago, New York, next to the new A's stadium in Las Vegas. And those projects, they come with a lot of execution risk, but they also come with a lot of upside. And look, I think the past couple of years, they've done transactions and been aggressive and created runway to have it play out. So I think there's a little bit of time there. And hopefully for the folks there, they can be successful with all those projects. You have Full House, who has currently a temporary casino in Waukegan, Illinois. It gets some of the Wisconsin market too. It's a temporary facility. And when they got the license for the temporary facility, as is often common, they had to commit to building a permanent facility. And what happens with these is you build a temporary facility for, who knows, $5, $10 million, and then you all of a sudden get a lot of EBITDA, maybe a nice number like 25 or 30, that then you have to go build the full casino for several hundred million dollars more. How much EBITDA can you get on the new dollars? So it's almost like the first dollars make a lot more sense than the next phase, but you have to do the next phase. And that kind of gets us to in Full House, a similar, not the exact same place as Evoke. I have an asset that needs financing, and I think they probably could go do a REIT transaction, but that caps their upside. So if I'm an equity holder, I'm looking at it just like Evoke. I go sell my land under this thing. It's like selling Italy. If I go sell my land under my temporary facility, yeah, I get it built. That's all well and good. but I've sold an asset and now I can't sell it again for more. My upside's capped. So I think what Full House is trying to do is go finance that permanent facility in a way that doesn't cap their upside. And I think so far they haven't been able to do that.
Jay, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks for taking the time to share your valuable insights, especially on gaming.
Thank you, Danielle.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Debt Wired. And as always, you can subscribe to or download every episode via Apple and find thousands of articles with insights, research, and more from our team at debtwired.com.